The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast, and not here this weekend is Steve. Yeah! Paddy! Yeah! Pete is.
Ooh.
And me.
Ooh.
Well, there we are. Before we start, last week it was at the back end of the podcast. Let's bring it up a notch. Let's, like the headlines there. It's like, we see the news. Very important news gets knocked down the agenda there. And you think it was still important. Like, Ukraine to me is very important. And I'm not seeing any of it. So anyway, before I talk about anything else, I'm starting to knock it down the agenda here. So if you listen to this on a Saturday, we will probably be in Snowdonia and we'll be doing 10 Peak Challenge. Walking
this time next week.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And it's for charity, of course. We're not doing it for fun. The people do that for fun. Can you believe that? So we're doing it for charity, of course, and we're suffering for a charity and we're trying to raise 10 grand. We're now at pretty much 20% of that, which was, it may not sound impressive, but last week it was literally, we weren't even double digit figures. So it's getting there. So thanks. So
yes.
Do you know what I thought actually, Pete? And by the way, if everyone listening to this just gave a tenner, we'd hit that 10 grand target easily. Okay.
Yes.
So just £10. I know you're thinking probably now, you're listening to this, you know, passively thinking, yeah, he's not talking to me. I am. I'm talking to you. You right there saying, no, he's not talking. I am. Right now, you, yes, £10.
Yeah. You know, well, I have to say, a number of people that are regular listeners have already donated, so
they
thank
have.
You very much.
And I've got to thank you. It's amazing that so many people have sponsors. But if you're sitting there thinking, or you may be thinking, oh, I'll get around to that. Because I do that with a lot of charity stuff. I do say, oh, I'll sponsor you, or I'll do that. And I forget for a week. And so sometimes it's good to remind people, you know, you still have sponsors. Yeah. But if you are sitting there, and you can, I know the markets are hard. They're very hard at the moment. And if you know the cost of living crisis has brought about this behaviour, we're all trying to rein in everything. You know, don't switch the heating on. Whatever you do, we can't afford to go up for a pint. That's kind of mentality. But you can. You know, you could spare a tenner. Because what I noticed, Pete, right, this morning in my office. Very cold because it's like an extension of the garage. It's, you know, one skin wall. It's got oil heaters in here, which I didn't use this morning, even though I was on the video with Paul Hill, who sponsored the podcast, big chunk of money. I did a video with him and I was shivering, literally physically shivering because it was so cold in here because it gets very cold and very hot. And whenever you come around to the winter, and we are coming into the winter now, and I'm thinking, when it gets really bitter in the evening sometimes, you go like, oh my God. And I often think, how do the homeless people survive in that weather? How do they do it? Because literally, even letting the dog out, I have to shut the door behind her. You know, she goes in the garden or something. You shut the door and think, God, bloody hell, it's freezing. And you think, how do people actually sleep outside in that weather? And I've often thought that for years now. I've often thought, what can we do to help some of these people get them off the streets in the winter? Because some people will be dying, you know? And sometimes I've seen lots of stories about homeless people, and many of them are a case where a mother, for example, find a new partner, won't get on with a teenage son or whatever. They'll kick him out, or they can argue, scream and shout at each other. And the mother sides with the new fella. And I think, what's going on here? And she sees some people just homeless. It's not much fault of their own. But I don't see how this actually survive in the winter, do you? I mean, to me, I can't even... It hurts me to think about it, just, in that kind of weather. So I'm thinking, if you are there sitting listening to this podcast in the comfort of your home, and it's warm, it's nice, you've got heating if you dare to switch it on, and you're having some food and all that, and you take the home comforts for granted, £10, it's not a lot. And this is what the money's going towards. It's homelessness, suicide prevention, people with mental health issues, goes towards, it's an excellent cause. And I think £10, if anything, with charity sometimes, I think, give the money, but also selfishly, I often think what goes around comes around, and you'd want help if you're in a situation like that. So it's a good thing. It's a good karma.
Yeah.
There's no downside to it,
No, and the way that they're, so it's Big Moose is the charity, and the way that they're approaching that is it's very much a mental health support services and helping people, and like you say, preventing suicide and ultimately preventing homelessness, because that's what, the mental health issues, it's a house of cards and it starts to tumble, doesn't it? And it ends in you know, various ways. And they're doing this incredible initiative. They're aiming to raise £1 million for these incredible causes or these services. And they're well on the way. They're like £260,000 they've already raised, and we are contributing to that. So it's an amazing cause. We're just casually strolling up 10 mountains next weekend. It'll be fine. And all we're asking for is, you know, maybe a tenner.
You say casually. You know, it's like, I don't want to do the planning on the podcast right now, though, but we haven't, first of all, sorted out where we're going to hook up, because we've got Paddy. What is Paddy doing with the fundraising? But Paddy, I know you're listening to this. You're another one. As yet, hasn't done any fundraising, right?
No.
So the least you could do, Pad, is sponsor me and Pete.
Exactly. Good point.
But I was thinking, I'm thinking of doing that as well, because I think, you know, I could sponsor you and Paddy, because you still want to give the cause a charity. So I'm thinking of doing that. But Paddy often pretends he posts a silly picture in our WhatsApp group and says, sorry, wrong group. And if you're in so many WhatsApp groups, just send the link out. Say, guys, you know, a tenner, that's all. £10.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Just go online now. I'll tweet it. By the way, if you're listening to this, I'll tweet it. Or if you just ask me somehow, I don't know, email me, justin@sharepickers.com. You'll see it there, or do a search for 10 grand peaks just giving. It's on there.
We'll put it on the tweet that goes out with the podcast, and if you're in the Sharepickers Club in Discord, you'll put it in there. So there's lots of ways of finding it, or just straight to Just Giving.
And there's lots of ways of just justifying that £10. If we ever give you any value, any entertainment, even if you're paying to see us go through some pain, or even just if you want to help people, you know, with these issues, homelessness, mental health, and all that, suicide prevention, you know, anything, it's £10. You know, it's going to a good cause. You are paying into the karma, good karma bank there. And I think, you know, whenever we meet our maker, this will come down to investing. They'll look at your balance sheet, right? And they'll say to you, well, look, so it's like assets and liabilities, right? They'll say, okay, what have you got in your assets thing there? And it's all the good stuff you've done. So, okay, you're right, all right. Well, you may be going into the good place, you know? Now, if you're stacked up with liabilities, you know, and you haven't done a lot and you've taken a lot and not given a lot, then think, hang on a sec, you know, you've got net liability position here, net current liabilities. You're in big trouble.
Yeah.
And the only way you can pay that back is by the devil. So there we are. So I don't want to put too much pressure on you. In the end, it's just easy to give a tenner, isn't it? You know, that's what I'm saying.
You're getting all Bob Geldof there for a second. Give us your money. Right, okay.
I've often thought about that, assets and liabilities on a personal level, you know? I mean, don't mean financially. I mean, anyway, what's your thoughts on the markets? Have you looked at anything this week?
I tend not to, because I dip in and out of it, having a quick look. I mean, for my portfolio, it's just really stagnating, I would say. I thought in the bigger macro picture, had a mixed bag, didn't we? Inflation wasn't quite as bad as we thought, but then the retail sales are clearly slumping, and the pound's taken a knock, isn't it, as a result?
Well, do you know what? I do think it's nuts. The American markets, like a month ago, this was pretty much a month ago, Wednesday, they came out with inflation figures, right? Now, remember these numbers. They're expecting 8.7% year-on-year inflation. They came in 8.5%. The markets rallied like crazy. Right? So that's 0.2%, 0.2, you know, better than they expected. And it literally, the Russell 2000 small cap index and the NASDAQ rallied so strongly, they went into a technical bull market, 20% up from the bottoms. What the heck? It's 8.5% inflation. Now, what you have on Wednesday, they're expecting 8.3. It came in 8.1, I think. It came in at 8.3, so still below the month before when it rallied, and they tanked. So you understand, the markets work on expectations. It's not what it is, because the inflation is clearly dire still, but it's what they're expecting. And because it came in above expectations, the market's tanked off. Because that sets in a chain of a command, but basically they think the Fed head, Jerome Powell, I'm going to raise interest rates to the roof. You know, he's quite a sensible, measured guy, really. But what people don't understand, the only thing that's going to break inflation is breaking growth, breaking the economy a little bit. You're not going to get prices down otherwise. You're not going to do it unless growth comes down. How does that work, essentially? People buy less, so people produce less. So the people, you know, the producers then say, we don't need as many staff because we're not even making as much. We're not selling as much. So you lay people off. Now, that happens several months down the line. You know, it takes a long time to see the effect of unemployment. It's a lagging factor, massively lagging. You imagine if you've got a business and you have a dodgy month. Look at our retail sales. And you can see right now, we're talking about the behaviour of people when you're completely surrounded by mainstream media saying the cost of living crisis, oh, people can't afford to live. And there are people who can't afford to eat, you know, or it's a choice between eating or heating. But the majority of people, there isn't, I'd say, not for the majority. There is for a minority, but you end up, you know, buying into this thing, and we've got to be very careful. We've all got to be careful now and just tighten our belts a bit. And then what happens is you get, like, retail sales coming in today from, UK. They were supposed to be, they were forecast to be 0.5% down month on month from July to August. They were down minus 1.6%, so down half of 1%, and they were down 1%, so three times as bad as the forecasts. So that there is evidence right there showing that people are tightening their belts. And even if their belts break, they won't buy a new one because it's the cost of living. So they'll just say, no, I'm not going to buy a new belt. No. So, But what I'm saying is, so the Fed, for example, the reason why the markets fell off because the Fed, there's only two ways. They can't directly control inflation. All they can do is pull some levers to slow growth down. In fact, I think the biggest, most evil lever that people don't see is QT. Do you know what QT is?
Quantitative teasing.
That's it, yes. Ooh, Jerome, you are a tease. Yeah, that's what he says to the ladies, you know, in the bar. He says, do you realise how much money I can pump into the economy or pull it out? I can pump it in or pull it out. I can pump it in or pull it out. And he says, Jerome, you're such a tease. He says, yeah, I know, it's quantitative teasing.
Is that it?
No, it's not quantitative teasing, is it?
No.
Jerome, you're quantitative teasing again. That's the middle ground between quantitative easing and quantitative tightening, I think. In between, either is quantitative teasing. So he says, I may pump some money in, I may not. It's, I don't know. Yay! You never know. We'll see you next month at the Fed meeting. But no, so if you look at the S&P 500, it went nuts, right? In the last 10 years, you had some shock factors happen. You had the great financial crash over 12 years, actually. The Fed balance sheet just went up massively. And what that means is they just create money. They just press a button and create money digitally. Yeah. And they just start buying bonds from, like, pensions and banks and all this stuff. And then those banks got loads of cash. So they put it into the stock market, essentially. And so you've got a lot of money going to the stock market. And QE, if you look at it, even especially after the COVID dash for cash crash, they went from, their balance sheet went from $4 trillion, literally in about 2 or 3 weeks, to $8 trillion. They doubled the amount of money going into the economy, into the markets. And the S&P just was on steroids, just went uphill massively. And so now they're doing the opposite. They're raising interest rates of loans, debt, everything becomes more expensive. People also then think, well, I can get a bit of savings here, get a couple of percent in the bank, whatever. So they start saving rather than spending and taking out loans or credit cards. And then also do QT, which sucks money out of the economy. So they're doing the exact opposite of what happens the last 12 years. But they will not stop until they see the effects of inflation coming down. And the thing is, they've got a dual mandate. They've got two things they have to do, that's all. They have one job, they've got two jobs. One is stable prices, one is employment. Trouble is, trying to get to stable prices may mess up unemployment. So if they see that effect happening, then they'll have to ease up on the gas and they may have to, you know, quantitative tease a bit and rather than tighten. But like I said, it's a lagging factor, isn't it? Jobs. If you had a business, for example, you had a bad month, you wouldn't just lay someone off straight away, would you? Say, oh, I'm going to switch it next month. Next month is a bad, then you've got, you know, people you're employing, you know, family, kids, mistresses, all that, they have to keep, you know, in favour. And you think, well, let's one more month. So it takes, you know, a couple of months, and then they said, no, this is not a one-off, this is a trend. We're selling less, we have to lay people off. So it takes a while to lay people off, you know, after the initial dip. So they're fed behind the curve. But I think once you get businesses in America shouting at him, saying, we're not selling anything, I think they will ease up a bit. But, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, you said your portfolio, if you look at the value of a portfolio, it hasn't really dropped a lot, does it, in the last couple of weeks? It's just gone...
No, it's kind of trading in a range.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
That's good though, isn't it? That's good. I mean, that means unless we get another massive leg lower, and I think we can sort of decouple AIM from the S&P 500, because the S&P 500 is literally what's it down at the moment? It's down S&P down 20%. It's been down 23.6%. It's down 20. Now AIM is down 34%, which is more in line with the average of a recession, sort of bear market recession, and it's now been over 12 months since the high. So that's around, getting into now the range, whereas S&P is not. It's going to be sort of nine months. I think we may see, because microcaps are more liquid. Everyone's got out, pretty much has got out. You know, you get traders messing around with it and jumping in and then jumping back out, but they realise, you know, they're not making any money, so they jump back out. But I think, you know, most sellers now in AIM stocks, they've given up. Or, you know, I've seen that recently on Twitter. The amount of interaction on stock chat on Twitter, unless Twitter's done something, the algorithm, is so low. It's like, you know, you get no reaction at all. And people just, and that's a good sign. People just switched off because they're not selling anymore. They're just not even bothering with it, you know. So when you get that, that's the bottom, because no one else left to sell, pretty much. All you need is a bit of, you know, good news, and it'll suck up the slack. Take up the slack.
Yeah.
And rally. You know?
Here's hoping.
Okay.
See you in about 3 months.
No, but do you know what? I was doing I'm going to post this video there, and I've been looking at the S&P 500, right? And and there's no point trying, everyone's saying, where is the bottom? Where's the bottom? When's the bottom of the market? Mm-hmm. Well, there's no point trying to guess the bottom. You're never really going to guess it, you know, unless you keep buying every single day. You're not going to guess it. But what you can do, and you wouldn't believe what I was doing last night. I spent about 4 hours downloading monthly closing data on the S&P 500 since 1991.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, they went through it all along with the chart. I looked at the big trend line, so the 200-day moving average and the 50-day moving average, and looked at when they crossed upwards, starting uptrend, when they crossed down. And essentially, it's one of the most foolproof systems. It's a long-term thing. I mean, I can tell you about it. I put this video, and it's pretty much a 95% chance, about 5% of the time, it doesn't work. Yeah. You have a quick sort of whipsaw of the market that goes down and back up quickly, so it'll cross over and cross back. Then you may buy a little bit higher than you saw that. But generally, I say 90 to 95% of the time, if you sell when, you know, the 50-day moving average crosses over to the day, and when you buy when it crosses up, you're buying when they're down. And now that's not, you know, I mean, it's probably like 10-15% from the bottom, but your job is not to catch the bottom, is it? Your job is to sort of make some money, so, and not lose money. So it's a very good way of doing it. I'll do a video on it, but I'm still formulating. I mean, I know it works a bit, but I want to put the figures alongside, you know, and formula, so I can get the percentages and gains, how much you'd get back if you put £1,000 in, say, you know, a quarter or a month, and like that. So, it's basically stop on those crossovers, or sell on those crossovers as well, or sell or buy. You know, it depends where it's going. Yeah. But the thing is, it's hard.
Someone must have done that before, surely.
Well, it's like any investment strategy. There are numerous ways they make money, but a lot of them take patience and discipline. And that's what most people don't have. Like Buffett can give you a formula for making money. You look at return on invested capital, and you say you won't touch companies that don't have a certain amount of return on invested capital, and that's it. You know, but essentially he'll have patience to sit there when the markets are selling off, and he'll sit on a big chunk of cash, and he'll wait there. But most people can't do that. You know, they have to invest their money somewhere. They have to put it somewhere. This is a punt. This is a good thing. This could go well. You know, but so it's very hard. It's not the actual strategy. It's like, you know, someone could teach you how to do most things, essentially, but will you do it? Will you have the discipline to do it? It's like if I said to you, Pete, if you now started, like, you know, run, if for example, if you've never run before in your life or very little, and I said to you, I can teach you how to run the marathon. It's not hard.
Yeah.
But you've got to have a discipline to do it. Now, you start off with, say, you know, if you've never run before, let's start off with, say, a half a mile walk first day. Next day, you extend it, or you walk for 10 minutes first day, walk for 11 minutes next day. You build it up every day, every minute. Then you start running, you know, for half a minute or whatever. And, you know, after about 3 or 4 months, you're probably close to doing sort of even a half marathon maybe, but who will do that every day? Who has a discipline? You know, if you want to lose weight, you know, for example, if there's a person out there want to lose 2 stone, I can write down a plan for you to lose weight. I look at what you're eating and how you're exercising. I'll write down exactly how you can lose weight, but will you do it? No, it's a lot harder, isn't it? When it comes to actually doing it, the discipline to do it, carry that out and train and eat properly, that's hard, you know, very hard.
Yeah, absolutely, yep. So, like anything worth achieving is hard, isn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly. This thing, for example, there are times when, I'll get it now, there are times when, you know, literally you're sitting there, it crosses, where's it, I'll scroll down here, it'll cross and you just do nothing for, let's have a look, so... Yeah, literally, in the Great Financial Crash, it crossed, right, on the downtrend. The Great Financial Crash, amazing. It was at, on the 21st of December 2007, the 50-day moving average crossed over the 200-day moving average at 1,484, right? Now, if you got out then, right, and waited till, this is now December 2007, and waited until the 23rd of June 2009, and did nothing. So this is what I'm saying is this fund will not be, you know, it'll not be, I will not be just in this. I've had 5 microcaps, but I want now going forward, because I've realised with this downturn, I always try and find systems and strategies all the time, especially in stock market. But so what I've realised in this downturn is I love microcaps because you can earn multiples of your initial investment. You can't do that with bigger cap stocks. You can't do that with funds. But the things that the weak part of my portfolio is, because they rally hard in bull markets, they also fall hard in bear markets. You know, they're high beta, so they tend to fall faster and harder than the actual bigger market or the wider market, and they rally faster and harder. So what I want to do, I thought, okay, I've got an issue here. I can't just, the positions I have in these small companies, I can't just dump them because it'll also affect the share price, especially in bear markets. So I thought, how do I solve the volatility and liquidity of, you know, my portfolio? I thought, I know, and I used to do this, didn't we? I used to have a fund, but I took it out for a while and I said, I'm going to earn more money in small caps. And I did, but I realized time to get back in or start scaling. So what I'm going to be doing now, microcaps will start to move quicker than the big cap stocks. And this fund is basically around about it's centered on the S&P 500, which are big caps. So the small caps, I think, in the UK will start to move faster. But over time, as I start to say, you know, they double my money in one company, I'll take some out, I'll put it into a fund. Eventually, in the next 3 to 5 years, I will have about 30% of my portfolio in this fund. That then, if you look at the volatility of that fund, it's not a lot because it's around the world. No. It's pretty much, so it's hardly, you know, it has dropped. But it's hardly dropped that much compared to microcaps. Microcaps gone down, like the AIM market's gone by 34%. This has gone down by not even 15%. So I'll have a big chunk of money in there, which I'll use as my cash, you know, but I'll be topping it up now for the next 3 to 5 years. So that way I'll solve the problem of liquidity and volatility. So what I want to do is know how to time it, you know? So I'll wait until these moving averages work. So in that fact, what I think I've got now is a perfect portfolio. I'll have about 5 stocks I really have conviction in, microcaps.
Yeah.
And a fund I'll be building up, which will help with the volatility and liquidity.
When you're saying, like, so you wait for it to double and then put a portion of it into the fund.
Yeah.
Okay.
So essentially what I'll do is, the way I'm setting up my portfolio now is I'll have two high conviction stocks, which will take up, say, 20%. The maximum I'll put into them is 20% each. Which is quite a lot, but it means it's quite a lot for small microcaps. But it means I have a lot of conviction in them, and I have 3 then at about 10%. Now, if one sort of tends to double or whatever, or overexposes me, I'll top slice, and I'll put that into the fund, and the fund will grow a bit slower, but obviously it'll be more stable, more liquid. So it's better than that. If you look at cash right now, for example, if you're sitting on cash, and what inflation is like, just say 10%, and you get 1% in the bank now, if that. So you're essentially losing 9%, you know, on your cash.
Yeah.
So you want something like this S&P fund, which does, in fact, it's pretty much an S&P fund, but it's a Vanguard Life Strategy, pretty much does 10%. It's done 10% every, in fact, since its inception in 2011, it's, even with this bear market, it's still done 191%. So you're doubling your money in 10 years on that fund. But of course, it doesn't move as fast and doesn't sell as fast.
But the funds aren't immune to crashes and no, like we saw in the pandemic and that sort of stuff. I mean,
this fund has over eight, the Life Strategy Fund, over 8,000 stocks in it in the UK, US. I mean, you've got like, you know, companies like AstraZeneca, BP, Shell who haven't taken the hit, and even the big companies in America, like the energy companies, oil companies haven't taken the hit. You've even got companies, you know, in the Far East, Middle East. So it's very, you know, literally one purchase and you're diversified across 8,000 stocks. And so
is that the Life Strategy?
Yeah. So why would you? That's what gets me. Why would you, as an investor, I find it hard to focus on, like, you know, 10 stocks. So an individual private investor who's got, you know, a job doing something else, actually keeping up on your research on like 10 or more stocks is very hard. So I want to hold, you know, 5 stocks I know back to front. I know a lot of. And then if I want, my diversification comes, liquidity, volatility, it literally comes in that fund. It's 8,000 stocks. You can't diversify better than that. It's got Apple, all that stuff, Microsoft, all those biggies. And
when it comes to top slicing, you know, the high performing stocks, I mean, it feels like a dream talking about top slicing. That seems like a long time ago. It will come back. It's that age old problem of then when things are on the up, you're like, well, I don't want to go on top slice here because it's continuing up.
Exactly,
and
this is where,
proportion is top slicing?
Yes, well, this is when we go back to volatility, isn't it? You know full well, if a stock's double, you should take money off. You should take money off. And that's an old adage, I know, but you should do. I mean, because if you look at it, whenever I am looking at a business, for example, and I'm looking at the margins on the business, right? EBITDA margins of 20% more is very good. You know, profit margins, you know, 10, 15, 20% are very good. Now, if you are in stocks and you are doing way better than that, you know, you think, hang on a sec, you know, I'm outperforming most businesses I'm invested in. You have to realize that if you double your money, but also I look at valuation as well. If I see a company, you know, it was trading on, say, 1 or 2 times sales, or maybe, say, 5 times or 10 times EBITDA, and it literally doubles that, and their growth doesn't grow with it. So, for example, if they're trading on, say, 10 times EBITDA, but their EBITDA grows 20% every year, it's fine, because you're never going above that 10 times. But if the EBITDA or the sales stop growing, then their multiple gets higher. They become more expensive. So I'll look at valuations as well. If a company is still going gangbusters and growing very well, and it's not overvalued, but then if you get a company, you know, all of a sudden go to 10 times sales, you think that's silly. You can't just, and it's got no profit or very little profits, and it's not growing. You think that's silly. It's a bubble there. It's part of the, you know, it's part of a hype in the market or something. But then I'm in profit, I'd take money off. So it depends on the valuation, but I mean, I never want to hold one stock that'll take up like something silly, like 50, 60% of my portfolio. It's gone nuts, you know? But that's it. Let's go back to discipline. It's a discipline. That's why everyone sells when the market, you know, sells off because they think it's going lower, and no one sells on the way up because everything's going higher.
Yeah.
But you have to realize the market doesn't keep going higher. But, you know, what's good now is having a cleansing. This bear market is needed. And the best time to invest is after a bear market. So you'll have, you know, 6 months of strong rally, maybe a little pullback then. And then another British year and a half, 2 years of rallying, a little pullback maybe. So you do have little pullbacks in the bull market. But, I mean, this is a bear market, which just cleans everything out and we can start again from a fresh. And it'll get the new highs again. You know, it will in a couple of years' time. You know, 2, 3 years down the line, it'll get the new highs. But I want to time it. So I'll be having, you know, about 30% in that fund by the time we have the next sort of rollover, which will then limit the volatility of my portfolio, you know? So, I won't get massive drawdowns. My portfolio value has gone down by 50% in value. So next time that won't happen. It'll be like maybe half that, hopefully, with the fund in there, because that will stay stable. Everything else will come down. But, So it's just a bit of rotation. Rotation, everyone. Rotate. I just think I watch CNBC and get these sort of market experts trying to guess the bottom or jumping in. And I'm thinking, are you nuts? Because even looking at average bear markets, the S&P is not there yet. And I punched this out on a tweet just now. I think people didn't even like it because it was too bearish, essentially. But Looking at the S&P, we are at now, it's just dropping, it's a support level at 3,900, right? Now, the low it had, remember, this was at 4,800 back at the highs, in 4,800 is now 38-something. It did touch 3,666 in June, so it may revisit those lows. But looking back at bear markets since 1929 for the S&P, these are the averages. So the average, this is without a recession, would take it down to 3,405. We're still at 3,666. Oh, no, we're still at 3,900. So we've still got a way to drop there, you know? Another, what are we at? What's that? 5, 10% on the S&P? Now, if you look at an average, if you look at an average with the recession, and that takes 12 months, by the way. We're not even at that. We're 9 months, that the first one. If you're looking at an average with recession, that would take you down to 2,782, and that the end would be in July next year. So we're not even conforming to, and by the way, the average wall in between in between that, in between the with recession, without recession, so the average wall is 14 months, and it would drop to 3,165. So when you consider what 3,800 or something, that's what's that in percentage terms? That's 700 points. That's 20%, isn't it? Another 20%. Mm-hmm. Even conform, and that would end in April. But so the best case scenario, and markets move a bit faster these days, but the best case scenario is January, and that's be 12 months, and then be 3,400. We're now at 3,800. So in any market, it doesn't matter. And let's be honest, I don't think this is going to be an easy time, because we've got historically high inflation, we've got interest rates going up, we've got, you know, like I said, the Fed sucking money at the market. So you've got to think, okay, is it going to be a bit lighter than a normal bear market without a recession? I don't think it is. I don't think it is. You know, just historically, we're scary times, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's just very difficult to predict, isn't it? And like you say, all the so-called experts all have a theory, but
that's it. All you can do, essentially, all you can, I mean, no one knows what the central banks will do, because it's all down to them. They control the markets. But I mean, it's just looking at, you know, the averages over the last, you know, since 1929, it's good, a lot of data there. That's the averages. Mm-hmm. So I understand the markets have changed, a bit more sophisticated, the money is faster, the money flow is faster, so it may not be as long. But we're not even at the most optimistic of averages there. So all you got to have a bit of patience. And also, just, you know, saying AIM, I don't think, it'll get dragged down a little bit, but AIM has had a massive sell-off. But here's the good news, Peter.
Right, here we go.
With all that, now, I don't know if you saw it today, I don't want to mention the Queen, but apparently it's the Queen's fault, you know, rest in peace, the Queen. But they're saying, ironically, the Jubilee celebrations and now the bank holiday are tipping us into recession. So that's all that's needed, because we're close to it anyway. And people say, no, we're now in recession. So if we're now in recession, oddly, that's good news.
Right. Well, you mean it's
for the markets, I mean.
Accelerated it.
That's accelerated. Okay. Yeah, because we are in, I mean, people have to understand the difference between the economy and the markets. If the markets can see the end is nigh, or a light at the end of the tunnel, they start to head towards it, you know? So if you look at, 6 months and 12 months before a recession are the worst period in the market, worst period of all in the market. So if you realise that, you think, well, okay, where are we now? And it's even worse than during the recession. So literally, I think the S&P, average return in the past 12 months, 45% chance return, but it can drop 3% is, but it's the average of the 12 months before. But it's not as bad for during a recession. It drops a lot less. It's a third less, 1%, minus 1%, they're saying there, during recession. So essentially, if we are now in a recession, that's better than being before a recession, because the performance of stock markets before recession is really bad. So when you think about it now, looking at what we've had in the last 12 months on AIM, of course, the market knew it was recession. I mean, we've had the worst sell-off. So now it may have a little bit of a rollover, but not a lot. We've had the worst, you know? And by far the best performance, 6 months after a recession, you've got an 82% chance of a gain. 12 months, 91% chance. You don't get better odds than that, risk-reward. There's a 91% chance. People bet on horses 10 to 1. You know, that's like a 10% chance. This is a 90% chance of a gain. And then even two years after, an 82%. So if we are, I think we are now, you know, technically or fundamentally in a recession, it's good because it's better than being 6 or 12 months before recession, market-wise. So
yeah, bring it on.
The next stage is, you know, post-recession or coming out of recession. So just hang on a little bit longer. Just hang on.
Just hang on in there, guys.
I know your fingers are hurting. Anything else? Anything else? Oh, by the way,
right.
I thought it was quite encouraging. Is it looking at the portfolio there? E-Energy is just travelling in a range. It's very good. I like that.
Right.
Because essentially, if you look at now where the demand is coming from, right? You imagine the demand at the moment for like solar panels, smart meters, or like a, you know, energy reduction. That's a very, very hot area. It's, you know, there are not many businesses, you know, if you sell ice creams or something or whatever you sell, I don't know, or luxury goods or anything like that, or, I don't know, stuff that, you know, people don't have to buy. I think it's a bit worrying, isn't it? But if, I mean, even Paul Hill, who's a man of, you know, a bit of wealth there, he said he's just ordered a smart meter for his home. Now, E-Energy do that straight away. They can identify your wastage straight away with their award-winning, you know, own IP smart meters. They're not better than just the basic home smart meters. Harvey is saying smart meters aren't smart meters. They just show you usage. This actually breaks it down at a granular level, behind circuit level. And as soon as you hook it up, you see. There you are. You're losing 20% of energy right there. Why is that? And someone will say, what? Who leaves that light on all night? who puts that spotlight, that Batman spotlight, you know, shine up the sky every night? Yeah, that's Jeff, that is. Yeah, you just leave the legs, put that on. Well, tell him to switch it off. It's just in the energy wastage. So you imagine having a big, because they only deal with big companies, you know, companies spending like $250 million or more on energy. Now, you imagine, you know, if you don't have these smart meters, how are you going to know that one of your properties or factories or whatever are wasting a colossal amount of, you know, energy compared to another factory? You wouldn't know, would you? You just say, where's the bill? You get a bill. Why is that factory? So then you put one of the smart meters in, straight away, what the hell are they doing in that factory? And you go up there, they're having all-night raves. Yay! Cut the raves out, guys. Yeah. Wait until energy prices come down.
Yeah, turns out it's a cannabis farm.
Go in there. This is not what we're selling, is it? Well, it was until you came along here. Now it's not. So that kind of thing, straight away, and they do say on the website that the most expensive energy is the one... No, what's it? The most cheapest energy, the one you don't use.
The most cheapest. Yeah.
The cheapest. What does this say? Energy bit. Yeah, it's good, actually. Basically, that you pay for wastage. You know, it's that waste you pay for. Get rid of it. You don't need it. Straight away, identify it, get rid of it, and then it's... the cheapest kilowatt is the one you never use. That's it. Eliminate energy waste and reduce carbon emissions with no upfront cost. And that's the thing, see? Businesses are already struggling, can't fork out for a new energy sort of consultancy or tech. Don't have to. The money you save, it pays for it all. Perfect. Yep. Absolutely perfect. And so that's an area of strength. I like that. But I think, and when I say that, I'm not talking about, we talk about, you know, the markets ahead of the real economy. This is true with business as well. So businesses, you know, suffering now, they won't stop suffering if inflation goes down by one percentage point, which it hasn't anyway. No. You know, they'll still suffer for a long time until it gets back to some normal levels. And even with the price cap freeze, I didn't realise this. You know, it's amazing they call it a price cap, isn't it, for consumers? Because considering it was going to treble, the cap is not really fitting really well, is it there? But... And businesses didn't have any price cap, so their caps will still be frozen at two or three times higher than it was. They're still going to have to, you know, find some efficiencies there or savings in the energy space. So I just think it's a win-win.
Yeah, no, you're a fan, I can tell.
Win. Yeah. Well, sometimes it's one of the things I think I have high conviction. It ticks all the boxes. I mean, even, you know, I've held companies where I like a lot, but then you realise. You check the shareholder register. The CEO doesn't have that much skin in the game. The CEO here does. He has over 60% of the stock, which is, you know, for a 30 million market cap company, it's a decent chunk. What is that? 3 million, but, it's about 2 million quid, isn't it? Isn't it? And half million, 2 million, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a decent chunk of change in anyone's book, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, nice.
Sad news about Eddie Butler, wasn't it?
That was a shock, wasn't it?
Do you know what? Really, he's come up. I just did some Googling stuff and some of his commentating, and he was good, wasn't he?
Very good. amazing commentator. Yeah, but yeah, very, very sad and sad, quite
sad
shocking.
Sad that he's on a charity walk in Peru.
Mm.
I read that. And I thought, what? A charity walk? Mm. What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. Yeah. But no. Yeah, it's very different to the walk we're going to be doing. Good. So it'll be fine.
Yeah, good. Okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Did you see that? Have you seen that Russian Wikipedia page? It's very funny. It's not funny at all, actually. I mean, funny as in weird.
No.
They've got literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 oligarchs in Russia. Right.
Yeah.
And they've all died. And they've got the circumstances there. Suicide note found next to his body. Next one. Suicide note found next to his body. British authorities, next one. British authorities have not found evidence of a crime. Next one. Wife and two sons were found dead besides him. Third one. Fourth one. Fifth one. Wife and 30-year-old daughter were found beside him. Is also fell off a cliff, fell out a window, died from his falling from his apartment, hospitalised for heart problems and depression, then fell out of a window. So he had heart problems and depression, then he fell out a window, fell from his boat. I'm thinking, do the Russians honestly think, but they don't really care. As long as they make an attempt to lie, you know, to cover it up, it's fine. You know, they can't judge, you know, Putin got his right arm man to shoot him in the head. They can't say that, but they may as well. Just say fell out a window. Fell out the window. They all fell out the windows.
Yeah.
They've obviously got a problem
with... Not very good standing next to windows.
They've obviously got a problem with safety catches. In this country now, if you're high up, you've got a safety catch in the window. They need to sort that in, especially oligarchs, who think they afford that extra safety catch on a window. But it's nuts, isn't it? Absolutely nuts.
Right. Who do you think and there's a Wikipedia page on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I've liked it. He said, as the guy I shared, Ian Bremner, for those keeping track at home, 12 threw himself from a window, shot himself 7 times in the head, Russian oligarchs' deaths so far this year. These are all oligarchs.
Yeah.
And oddly, I don't think it's obviously coincidental, these oligarchs have been quite critical of Putin.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that I don't know what the coincidence has been, that and the windows.
No.
But... You know, it's obviously something going on there with them.
Yeah.
But there we are.
Interesting.
Did you see David Beckham spent 13 hours queuing?
Yeah, so I saw that.
Did you see the actual time when he went? It must be so annoying being him, being standing next to people. He's very dressed very smartly. He looked like he was dressed very smartly in a suit and coat. But you know, standing next to people, asking questions, then reporters came and asked him questions. And he was there for 13 hours. And if you saw the time he went into the room, he didn't look very happy. He looked absolutely knackered. His eyes looked red. And in his eyes, you could see, why the hell did I take the VIP the VIP route? Because people were going nuts about that. It's a VIP route. Why are VIP people going in first? Theresa May and all that went in and didn't have to queue. Hang on a sec. You are talking about equality in a queue for a monarch.
Yeah.
Do you not understand that? It's a monarch, the queen. So you can't complain about equality. It doesn't exist. Because it doesn't exist. Why are people outraged by that? Because it doesn't exist. But I do like that guy. Have you seen those guys, the spoof of those guys where they run out of things to say? Have you ever listened to some of those?
No.
Have you not? I've sent them in. Are you a bit of a royalist, Pete?
Well, I'm not a royalist, no. But
not a royalist, yeah.
I'm not a royalist, but no. What? Oh, you mean on like the news channels?
You know, it's this guy called This Is Tom Little, right? And he basically gets BBC footage of like the boring stuff that's happening there. He say, and here's the Queen's car coming down the aisle now, and she's a remarkable lady, absolutely remarkable, and she liked people. She's a people person. She very much liked to shake people's hands, to meet people, to smell people. But she also liked her own time. She liked spending time on her own, you know, playing Wordle, games on her own. She liked watching The Simpsons. Her favourite character was Fat Tony. And he goes on. And he went through all the characters' differences of like cartoons that she'd liked. But he does it in such a voice that it could be, you know, these people have to fill time. He said last week they have to fill time, you know, and they have to go into minute, inane detail on anything. But watch them; they're hilarious. And
So, what's the guy's name? Sorry,
he's got. I'll send you a link. But this is Tom Little, and
Tom Little,
it's brilliant.
Right.
He goes through things like. Who's her favourite? Video games. She likes Bandicoot. She plays things at this. And just goes into every stupid deal what she likes and what she doesn't like. And they did one with Charles as well. He's done two so far. But it's fantastic. And there we are. Anyway. Right, anything else? Anything worth watching on TV?
No, I really haven't actually. No.
Just stare through the window.
No, that's plenty. Exactly. Mm. Yeah. That's nice.
Okay, all right then. And don't forget, everyone, if you can, all we need is a £10 note. Not literally.
No.
So some of the boys, I'm going to Cheltenham this year. I haven't been to see the boys for ages.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, it's a hard one now. I can't drink all day. I'm going to take it slow. Even though Paul will be saying, come on, drink up. So every year for years, I went to Cheltenham with some of the lads from back home, South Wales. Those are my friends I've known since they're a kid. And I knocked on the head because I can't drink for 12 hours.
No.
And stay sane for days afterwards. It drives me insane. I feel really bad. So I'm going to go see them. I haven't seen each other for ages. Yeah, but I did ask them to sponsor me. And
nice.
Paul and Nick have sponsored me. Gavin said, I'll give you cash on the course. I said, Gav, trouble with that is like you may go on the second favourite in 12:30, you know, after a couple of pints of Guinness, you know, I'll check it in. So I'll give you cash. And do you take American Excuse? That's what he said. Do you take American Excuse?
Nice.
They're always the best. Marvellous. All right, then.
Right.
Peter.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks, Justin.
Speak you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.